Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Wednesday, November 15th, 2023, the middle of the month, of course, and the last quarter of the year. Thank you so much for tuning into the Eastman Financial Report and watching us on WVW-TV. As you know, WVW-TV has been around since, I think, 2006, and it brings an amazing quality of information to the marketplace of ideas in the American experience as well as globally. And we are pleased to be part of the WVW-TV lineup and certainly are thankful for all of you for watching. And as you know, we are not a commercial network. We don't sell advertising. So you won't be interrupted. I won't be interrupted during my program. But we do have sponsors. And of course, the sponsors can be viewers such as yourself who enjoy watching amazing content. And you'll notice it's free of charge. There's no subscription. There's no paywall. You can click on 24 hours a day and see great live programming as well as great recorded programming. And we thank you for that. We thank you for your sponsorship. You can always reach out to the foundation, WVW-TV Foundation, and make a donation. And we also have, as I said, sponsors who sponsor our programming. And the sponsor who sponsors my program is Swiss America Trading, which is an American company based out of Arizona that makes a market in tangible precious metals. So if you're thinking about adding to your collection of tangible precious metals, which means precious metals that you buy and you can hold and you can hide in your sock drawer, these are things, you know, if you hold it, you own it. That's what tangible precious metals are. It's a way to convert Federal Reserve notes into tangible precious metals with the idea of diversifying your holdings. So you will perhaps have some protection against future inflation or at least have a diversified base for your wealth. So if you're looking at precious metals investing at all, there's a great amount of information. And if you call them at 1-800-519-6271, they will be happy to send you lots of free information. As you can see on the screen, these are bullion coins that are minted by governments, and these happen to be minted by the United States government. And the idea is that they take a certain amount of gold or silver or platinum, and they mint it into a standardized size, which is a coin. And these are actually legal tender, although they're maybe a 50-cent coin is worth a little bit more than 50 cents in silver. But if you're interested in adding these to your collection, or if you're interested or wondering what to get your nieces and nephews and grandkids or children, whatever, crazy Uncle Mortimer, what do we get them for the holidays, gift-giving season? Well, this is a real opportunity to do that. And I wanted to mention that Swiss America is currently offering a special of $13.50 for the Standing Liberty half dollars. You're seeing the Standing Liberty in the middle. I think that's the 1 ounce size. But this would be the half dollar size. And the price of $13.50 includes shipping to your home, your office, your business. And that's a great deal because if you buy things online, you know that shipping costs can sometimes make things a little pricey. Well, here you have an opportunity to pay a great price for silver and also have it delivered for free. So if you're thinking of what to get for stocking stuffers or the inevitable gifts, this might be an idea to consider. Of course, when you give someone precious metals as a gift, they're not going to use it and then throw it into the garbage and it ends up in a landfill. This is stuff, precious metals are things that people treasure and keep all of their lives. So it's an idea and a thought. You can also go to the Swiss America's website, swissamerica.com. And if you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, then they'll know you heard it here, you can get the same free information. You can shop around, you can buy online, and it's a great way to explore this area of the market. So if you're looking for somebody, vendor to deal with in the precious metals space, certainly Swiss America has been around a very long time, with great reputation. They're very loyal sponsors to WVW-TV, our network, and you ought to consider giving them a call or going online and seeing if you can take advantage of that $13.50 special. You can buy up to 250 coins, so you can be very generous this holiday season. And this offer is only good until supplies run out, then their inventory is depleted, and then they'll come up with something else later. So anyway, give it a chance. Give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to the SwissAmerica.com website and take advantage of this special and see what they have to offer. Okay, let's move on to the news. Lots of news today. I'm torn. Which story should be the news lead? The commerce. Let's start with the Commerce Department reports that consumer spending has declined by 0.1% in October. That's declined from September. If you remember last month, the September increase, according to the Commerce Department, when they put their number out, it was up 0.9. It was almost up 1%. And I had mentioned back to school. That's a big deal in August and September. You know, people are buying stuff, going back to college, going back to kindergarten, grade school, high school. There's lots of spending activity when the academic season starts. But now we come into October and we think about the student loans kicking in, and we're seeing that consumer spending has actually dropped 0.1%. Now, statistically, 0.1% doesn't mean too much. I mean, there are rounding errors and it goes up, it goes down. But what we're not seeing is last month was 0.9, which is almost 1% increase. Well, we're basically seeing it disappearing in October. And of course, we'll be watching these numbers in November and December, because November, of course, you've got Black Friday and you've got, you know, everybody's ramping up for the holidays, and we'll see how consumer spending goes. But when you dig into the numbers, what you're seeing is that big ticket items are softening rather dramatically. Big project spending for home improvement project spending is softening. People are doing smaller things and buying smaller things. And that becomes, sort of a trend in the economy that, you know, while people still have to buy things, or maybe don't have to, but the things they need, they're using much more consumer discretion as to whether, do I really need this? Should I really spend to buy this? Or should I buy something cheaper, or buy the cheaper version? Or should I just put it off? Or, you know, people are making those decisions more. In good times, people don't make those decisions. You go to the store, hey, we need all this stuff. And in bad times, or at least more difficult times, people become much more discretionary with their spending. And of course, I think we're seeing that. It's a consistent number. And when we talked yesterday about the University of Michigan does that incredible survey of the populace, you know, the vox populi, and samples the person on the street and says, what do you think about the economy? And well, one thing we know is that people are perceiving that inflation will continue to howl along, even though the government numbers came out and said inflation is softening. In the minds of the people, they think it's going up. And you can watch my show yesterday, the recording. I talked about that at length. They also asked the question, the University of Michigan asked the question, what do you think, how's the economy doing in general? And they're like, they're down. So when you see those metrics happening, and you see that the Commerce Department numbers are coming out that consumer spending is softening, That tells you that there's, you know, the aggregate demand within our national income, our GDP, our economy, our big ball of economic activity, that consumers are seeing what they see on the ground and they are slowing down. You know, whether it's cautionary or frankly not the money, we know that consumer credit card debt has been increasing, which is not good, because what it tells you is people are dialing back on their spending, but the credit card debt is still going up. That tells you that people are kind of living in the credit zone because they're not making ends meet, and that's not a really good thing. So, anyway, one of the things about economic data, and I've been talking about this from time to time, is that the people who live in this world, and this, you know, the professional economists, the PhD economists, and the finance people, and the Wall Street people, and the money manager people, they tend to look at these numbers because these are the numbers that drive markets. And if you think about that as being sort of a small village, and everybody's looking at the same numbers, and then, okay, this number change means this, and this number change means that, it becomes somewhat myopic, where you tend to see your world, and your world is moving, you know, billions, if not trillions of dollars around the globe. You tend to look at numbers, and that drives the reality. So if there's a chance that the numbers are incorrect, intentionally or unintentionally, that can move markets. And I think that's something that we're looking at, where the professional number looker adders are looking at numbers that suggest that the economy is just not doing that badly. Inflation is coming down, you know, and gasoline prices are down, and, you know, spending is still up 0.1%. It's not declining. But then you take a look at the University of Michigan subjects, the people on the street who they sample, and that's a big part of that survey. It's a really great survey. If you ever have a chance, you know, search it out online and read about how it works. But they do a lot of good work there, because what they do is they ask the person on the street, hey, how do you think the economy is? And, you know, the average person on the street doesn't live in this myopic bubble of world finance, so they're not reading these statistics where, you know, a tenth of a percent can mean this and that. And they don't have to, because if you're in the professional finance world, that tenth of a percent number means something, because everybody else in the village, it means something, and you don't want to be the guy standing there at the door when everybody else is well on their way. So it's something to think about from the public perspective, because this information goes out into the public. You can read this on, you know, very prominent national media, financial media, and some of the more fringy stuff, or some of the more you know, libertarian type financial reporting, and it's out there. So when you see these numbers, it matters. And that's why what this tells me is when you look at the University of Michigan study and you see the contrast with the federal government's numbers with respect to where the economy's going, and then you see the Commerce Department, United States Commerce Department, coming out with what is a clear indicator of a 0.8% decline in consumer spending in 1 month. Now, of course, they revise everything, so we'll see what happens to our 0.1 next month. But for now, let's talk about it like it really is. And those things tend to be, you know, very, very interesting numbers. So, okay, so I wanted to get that point across. And now we'll talk about the next big headline, of course. And if you've been watching Congress, I mean, this is the third time now since I started broadcasting back in, I think, March, late February, early March, is the federal government shutting down. And of course, everybody panics. And poor Janet Yellen, you know, you probably want to be the Pepto-Bismol supplier to Janet Yellen. You probably would become rich, poor thing. She's got to deal with the fact that we have this great big spending with these continuing resolutions. We get this huge spend demand. And her job is to go, you know, to rummage through the couch cushions, find the money and pay the bills. And one way she can do that conveniently without having to rifle through every federal couch in America is to sell debt. And of course, if we are at the limits of these continuing resolutions, you legally can't continue to sell debt. So she has got to wait until Congress gets its act together and does something so she can continue to fund the operations of the federal government. And so she's kind of caught in the middle. And as you know, I've mentioned a number of times, Janet Yellen is probably one of the smartest people out there, because she's not only the Secretary of the Treasury of the United States of America, but she's also a former Federal Reserve chair. She was the chair of the Federal Reserve. She knows this stuff. I mean, there's no doubt that Janet Yellen really understands economics. And the point is, we're watching Congress for the third time now, fiddling around. And of course, we know that Friday the government's supposed to run out of money and they're going to shut down. And then yesterday I said, don't worry about it, they're not going to shut down. Well, here it is, 24 hours later, almost to the minute, and government is not shutting down, because the Republicans, and with great enthusiasm by the Democrats, passed these continuing resolutions that will punt. It's a two-step program, and some of them will be extended through January, and others will be extended through February. And of course, this takes the crisis off the table on Friday. And of course, what's next week? Well, next week is Thanksgiving week. And of course, a lot of people, if they, you know, they work through Friday of this week, then they're going to take off the whole week next week, because they're going to, you know, maybe go deer hunting or give thanks or whatever they're going to do. It's a week where America takes a breather, and everybody in Congress, after going through this three times in one fiscal year, actually it's two federal fiscal years, but one calendar year, are basically, they kick the can to January, February, and they're going to go home and have a nice Thanksgiving week. And then we hope they do. I mean, they should relax, take it easy. We've had instances where the union guy is testifying before the Senate and threatens, and you know, or invites the inquisiting senator to a fist fight. Nothing like the United States Senate for decorum. And then, of course, we've got the former speaker, you know, giving the elbow to one of the House members. Nothing new under the sun. I tend to think back to the founding of our republic in the 1700s, when when Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton decided they didn't like each other to the point where they would fight a duel. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell in a sword fight in the floor of the gallery? Boy, that'd be something. Won't happen. But the point is, this has been going on for a very long time. And when you watch this government in Washington, it's just another example of, you know, tempers are flying, and it's really interesting. And I think by punting the continuing resolutions to January and February, we have to keep in mind, and you perhaps should keep in mind as well, that we are entering into an election year where we are going to be electing the President of the United States under our constitutional system. Every 4 years, there is a contest to see who's going to be elected President of the United States. And of course, if you think back over the history of these elections since 2004, it was Gore v. Bush, hanging Chads, Supreme Court, selected, not elected. Since 2004, we've had rather contentious presidential elections. Of course, we can think back to the 2016 election where Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton and lawsuits were flying and electors were being encouraged not to vote for the right for the wrong person and all that. And then, of course, nobody will forget 2020 election, not even a go there. That was it's still contentious. And I suspect that 2024 will be contentious as well, because it looks to be a rematch and it's going to be a crazy election season. So here we are with January and February. We're going to be dealing with continuing resolutions, the national debt. You know, when I started my program, I looked back, it was $32 trillion. And I told you how long it would take me to hand you $32 trillion. We are probably going to be higher than that. You know, we conservatively we went to $33 trillion, and now with the $2 trillion deficit for one fiscal year, we thought maybe $35 trillion. So people are saying $5 trillion extra. So it's going to be a big number by the time the election rolls around next November, which is it's 51 weeks from today, actually, or yesterday. It's going to be a raucous time, and the problem we have is you're looking at consumer spending tightening. You're looking at the University of Michigan study and other studies, including Federal Reserve presidents and regional Federal Reserve banks saying, boy, the economy is really soft, slow, stagflation, all this stuff. And then you're going into a situation where student loans will be, you know, on everyone's mind, you know, 6 months worth of less discretionary income. Keep in mind, those are post-tax dollars that you're paying federal student loans back with post-tax. I mean, you pay, you know, you're in the money, you get half of it, the taxes, state, local, federal, you know. And then, so people are going to be like, you know, pretty well tapped. And of course, if we see some sort of a bingy Christmas season, holiday spending season, we could see, you know, even more credit card debt, which means your monthly payments are higher. It's not going to be a good time for the average American rolling into a presidential election year. So we can expect to see some fireworks, and we'll see how that plays out. That's why I think it's a very difficult time politically. And I think that, you know, as we do have these national elections, keep in mind the entire House of Representatives is up for re-election every 2 years. Every November, every second November, you elect the person who's going to represent you in the House of Representatives. Your senator, of course, is elected to a six-year term, which there are a lot of people who argue originally under the federal constitution, United States senators were effectively delegated by the state legislators and governor. They would decide the two senators that the state would send to Washington. The United States senators, their initial original job was to defend the interests of the sovereign states, okay? And that's why each state had two senators. Now, if you remember back in the beginning, the colonies were different sizes. New Hampshire was this little thing, and of course, New York was this great big thing, Pennsylvania. The populations were different, and there was a great deal of concern as we put our federal constitution together. How do you have fair representation? You got great big states like Texas and California, who weren't there at the time, but they have lots of population. So if you have a House of Representatives, then back then was the New York and Pennsylvania delegations that would be the biggest. And of course, the southern states were a little concerned because they were agricultural. And New Hampshire was concerned because they were a little So at the end of the day, the compromise is they structured the structure of the federal government as we have it today was that there would be a bicameral system. That means two houses, bicameral, you know, like camera. And we have the House of Representatives, which is the people's house, and the representatives are elected proportionally based upon the census numbers in your district, your state, you know, your county, your district. And then each state got two senators. And the idea was it was going to balance out so that the little states had equal representation with the big states in the Senate. And in the House of Representatives, the little states would have one or two representatives, and the big states would have lots of representatives. So the House would do something, and of course, they control the budget. And then the Senate was sort of in the back of the minds of the founders. There's the House of Lords in England, okay? And that was back in those days. Those were inherited positions that were passed down through primogeniture to the eldest son. And effectively, the House of Lords served as, and still does, the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom, okay? Well, and it's changed. They no longer do it that way. But back in the 1790s, the Senate was very much this idea that wise lords, we don't have any lords, we don't have any titles, which is good, very good. But there are these idea that the states would send two wise senators and they would sit in the upper house. And whatever crazy happened in the House of Representatives, and of course, it's pretty crazy. I mean, you can go through entire American history, you know, the fist fights and everything else. But at the end of the day, whatever legislation emerged from We the People, the idea was that this august body of 100 senators would sit there and think about, what was this prudent? Is this good? Is it good for the states? Well, all that changed when they amended the United States Constitution and made United States senators directly elected by the populace statewide. Well, of course, now our U.S. senators are elected to statewide office, and there's two of them, and they're staggered, and they're six-year terms, which is a long time. I mean, 6 years is a very long time for anybody to serve anywhere. And the idea was you'd have these, you know, deep-thinking intellectuals. I mean, Chuck Schumer, yeah, right. Anyway, you have these senators up there. You know, I mean, just the list is long. Mitch McConnell, he's another one. I mean, at some point, you should retire, okay? There should be wiser people who are younger and brighter. And anyway, the United States Senate was supposed to be the breaking mechanism to keep the House of Representatives from going crazy. Well, because of this direct election, you've basically taken the shift of power in the United States government, where we the people are down here in the House having a raucous old time. And the wise and learned people who represent the state interests, you know, the state of Illinois, the state of Wisconsin, the state of California, and you've turned that into a, like a super legislature, and it because of its elected situation, it becomes highly political. In the beginning, the Senate wasn't political. It was supposed to be this, you know, I don't want to use the word overlords, but they were the overseers of what was going on in government. This is supposed to be the wise old heads that said, you know, it may be time to put the brakes on some of this crazy here. We don't have that. We got two houses of crazy. And I think that's the problem. So when you look at the results, you know, you always can pick, call names and, you know, point fingers and But at the end of the day, the thing speaks for itself. That's when I was in law school, I heard this amazing phrase, res ipsa loquitur. And I had not heard that in my Midwestern upbringing. We don't speak in Latin around these parts. We maybe speak English and German and Spanish and French and everything else. But we don't speak Latin, so when I hear this thing, res ipsa loquitur, and it was like one of those epiphany moments. And that what that effectively means for people like you, like me, who don't speak Latin, it means the thing speaks for itself. And in law, it's a doctrine where the evidence will speak for the case. And when you come to, you know, a trial or you know, a dispute, and you put your evidence on the table, the thing speaks for itself. And that's ultimately how the truth comes forth, because the thing speaks for itself, okay? And when you look at the United States government with our bicameral house and this punting of the federal budget down, kicking the can down the road for the third time in one calendar year, two fiscal years, let's be fair, the thing speaks for itself when you look at $33 trillion in debt. The thing speaks for itself when you look at $2 trillion in annual budget deficit, which means that the taxes collected are $2 trillion short of the amount spent. Now, the good news is they're not raising taxes to cover the gap, or we'll all be walking around in, you know, barrels or, you know, cardboard boxes, you know, eating leaves because nobody would have any money left. That's a vast amount of money. So I think from a perspective of, you know, as you go into this crazy season we're going into, it behooves us to think about the obligations of any government to operate in a prudent fashion. You know, it doesn't matter policy-wise. Okay, we're gonna feed the poor, and we're gonna buy guns, you know, guns and butter. But at the end of the day, if you buy the guns or you buy the butter, or you buy both guns and butter, you ought to have the means to pay for it, because what's happening is that we are entering into a debt cycle that is becoming quite scary. There was a statistic that that caught my eye, of course, and that said that governments around the world are their debt service, okay, on the debt for all the governments who issue all the bonds, and this is a global thing. Germans issue bonds, the French issue bonds, the Scandinavians issue bonds. It's $2 trillion, okay? The debt service is $2 trillion on all the government debt outstanding. Well, our debt, the United States, is more than half of that. And we're like 330 million people in a globe full of 6 to 7 billion people. We got a lot of debt. And this idea in Washington that you can just continue to spend money, it's like there's no nexus between national wealth and the amount of money these people are spending on everything under the sun. You've got entitlement programs, which everybody on Social Security and Medicare, yay, we're happy about that. But you also have all sorts of domestic programs, and you've got an amazing amount of defense spending, which is like our defense spending is more than the next top 10 countries, you know, the next 10 down. We spend a lot of money. And then there's just, you know, shelling out pallets full of billions to people and wherever, you know, they ship over, hey, you need $1 billion? No problem. We'll load up Federal Reserve notes and ship you a pallet. This is out of control. And I think ultimately it hurts the people, because somebody is going to have to pick up the pieces. And I think that's why when we, you know, when you're going to be invited to cocktail parties for your congressional representative, because of course they'll all want to go back to work in Washington, you may want to ask that question. How do you extract yourself from this? And of course, I've been following this, the debate in the public media. And some people say, well, we're going to have fiscal prudence. And that means cutting spending. Well, good luck with that, because there's, you know, nobody wants their ox gored, okay? And when you cut a dollar from some program, there's a lobbying group that comes flying out of the box screeching about your cruelty to humanity. It's not going to happen. And then the next thing is, well, you can raise taxes. But if you raise taxes to cover our current spending burn, people will have no money. I mean, you can see the consumers are dropping right now. So how do you do that? Well, my thinking is that you're going to inflate your way out, because at some point inflation is going to have to make 33 trillion look like kind of a small number. But you better be ready. You better be on the right side of that ocean. And it's not going to happen fast, but it's going to happen diligently, persistently. And that's or it could happen fast. You could start slow and go fast. And another thing that I'll leave you with until tomorrow is, if you look back in history in the 1860s, the Russian Tsar spent himself broke developing and wars and this and that. And in order to balance his budget, he sold Alaska to the United States of America. Now, from our perspective, that was a deal. Stewart's folly, Stewart's icebox. We bought Alaska, okay? But what if we have to sell it back because we're broke? What if we have to sell it to the Chinese? Think about that. That would be bad. Anyway, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in. Houston Financial Report and WVW TV. Appreciate your viewership. Have a great day. Bye.